about 2 hours away from game two, Mets-Yankees of the Subway Series. Yankees trying to even it up before they take on the Blue Jays, and the Mets take yet another off day. We are now joined by one of the rare men who is loved by Met fans and Yankee fans. And you watch him on the Yes Network. He's an excellent broadcaster. And Sunday Night Baseball, ESPN, the great David Cone. David, we appreciate you coming by.
Sure. For you guys, anytime.
Thank you, man. So, first, I got to start off with something that these guys disagreed with me about, and I'm curious where you stand. Juan Soto is an amazing baseball player. When he bunted yesterday on 3-0, I almost fell out of my chair. You may have heard me scream from where I was sitting. If you're the pitcher and you see Juan Soto attempting a bunt on 3-0, or he thought it was 2-0, aren't you almost having a party?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think he forgot the count. I really do.
That's what we said.
Because when he eventually walked, you could see, you know, there was no shuffle. There was no swag. He's got the biggest swag in the game when he walks, you know, with the shuffle.
Yeah.
So I think he lost track. I don't know. I mean.
But are you okay with the bunt?
Well, I'd rather see him go deep, obviously, right?
Yes.
Drive the ball and go deep.
But isn't it unexpected?
Right? Very unexpected. It's an automatic hit. And to in his defense, Aaron Judge is all world right now hitting behind him. So it could be a two-run home run if he gets on first base.
I think it was either he was trying to get a hit, as you said, or he's just trying to mess with David Peterson. Like, you have no idea what's coming.
Right.
You have no idea.
But to your point, like right now, the Yankees have two of the five best hitters in all of baseball in Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. And with everyone else struggling, and I don't know if guys change their philosophy based on that, you tell me, but I would be more aggressive saying, I need to drive runs in because no one else really is.
Yeah, that's a valid point. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you want Juan Soto swinging the bat, right? Or just working the pitcher and working the count like only he can. So, yeah, we all were surprised. We were like, what's he doing? And even he does some goofy stuff sometimes. He's kind of like a little kid out there. That's what makes him so good because
right.
he's kind of in his own world and he's always smiling, enjoying himself, and all the antics. So you know, it's kind of fitting when you think about his personality.
Right, you need that a little bit actually, because it's such a long, grinding season, as we all know. The Yankees don't have a ton of solutions behind the top three, and it gets a little bit black hole-ish back there. And I guess they're making some adjustments, and it's partly because Glaber's out. I guess because of his groin that he was talking about yesterday with the non-hustle play. But what can Aaron Boone do? Like, what can he do to make this pop a little bit more? Because I think it's good players who are just going through a really tough time at the wrong time.
It's true. And I think the Yankees on the depth side were counting on their farm system. And they actually do have some good young prospects. We're seeing one right now in Ben Rice,
mm-hmm.
who you'll see start first base. And he's been impressive so far. And you don't know about rookies, but you want to see more. And then, you know, the Mets have their own thing with Vientos and Bailey,
sure,
too,
yeah.
certainly. They have a kid named Caleb Durbin, who got hit in the hand. He was off to a great start in AAA, played second base. He probably could have gave them some depth. Dominguez has an oblique injury.
Horrible timing with
right.
that.
That's what I think they were counting on to fill. He would be here right now, you know, with the injuries that they've had. So, you know, the problem is there's another guy, Pereira, that plays the outfield that has Tommy John surgery.
Yep.
So the list goes on and on. There's about four or five minor league guys that were knocking on the door that they thought would be their depth pieces, and they've all been hurt.
There is, you know, this is a long season, obviously, and as a baseball fan, I've learned, all right, I got to be patient. You're never that good when you're hot. You're never that bad when you're struggling. I have gotten the sense that the Yankee fan, 8 out of 11, they're deeply worried. I still look at this as a funk from a good team. What say you watching this team right now?
Well, I do believe that the first part of the season, everything went well for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were a little bit over their skis, especially the pitching staff, because that was what we were really worried about when Gerrit Cole got hurt in spring training, was, uh-oh, the red flags are up.
Right.
How will they do? Nestor Cortez coming off an injury, what's he going to be like? Really, everybody from top to bottom almost overachieved to a certain extent,
true.
Especially the bullpen. And now we're seeing the bullpen start to get turned over a little bit. And, you know, outside of Clay Holmes and Luke Weaver and the Met throwaway, Tonkin, you know, who's been lights out.
Double throwaway.
That's kind of the top three in the Yankee bullpen. So, yes, they need some help. There's no doubt about it. But Judge and Soto are that good. They're all world. They really are a great tandem. Together, they've been just phenomenal. We haven't seen this accumulation of war. If you want to use war as a
mm-hmm.
ranking,
right.
really, the 27 Yankees with Ruth and Gehrig are the only tandem that are, at this point in the season, almost a halfway point, that have a better war ranking than Soto and Judge in the history of the game.
Yeah.
It's amazing that I was looking coincidentally at the war ranking yesterday at the Yankees, and you see that, but then you also see everyone else's war is
yes.
horrible.
Well,
can you sustain scoring enough runs and winning when it's literally only two guys doing it? Or are you going to see teams do what the Mets did last night, which is essentially say, I'm going to let them beat us?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the Yankees are up against it. I mean, you trust the track records of guys like DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres, and you think, okay, you got to ride this out because eventually they're going to turn it around.
Right.
Maybe their overall numbers on the year won't match the back of their bubblegum card, but when they do turn it around from that point on, they'll be something. They'll be a presence. And, you know, if not, they're going to be in trouble without a doubt, and they're going to have to think about alternatives.
Yeah, you were talking about some of the starting pitching overachieving. That was without Gerrit Cole. Now Gerrit Cole is back, his second start of the season. He gets roughed up a little bit. And you could tell he was just trying to get right with Vientos, and Vientos has punished him. He's become a better hitter than I think we want to give him credit for. I think now we have to give him credit, Mark Vientos. But where is Gerrit Cole right now? I mean, it's hard to miss that much of a season and then just jump right back into it and be a quote-unquote savior, which is kind of being asked to do in some ways.
You know, based on, you know, your career and what, you know, everything you've seen. So even though it's a different sport, it's kind of the same mentality. And, yes, it's tough. He pushed his rehab short because it was the Orioles. Yankees had some injuries to the rotation. It just, the timing lined up to where, you know what, I've only thrown 65 pitches up to this point after my third rehab start. Let's just go ahead and push the envelope here. And he's still in spring training. So he faced a hot lineup. They were on him. He had a tough first inning. He was in kind of search mode in the second inning. They made him pay. And so certainly, you know, he needs a little more time to get it going. But, yeah, it's, that was the wake-up call for somebody when you think he can just jump right back in there.
Yeah.
At a team that's clicking right now, as the Mets lineup is, you can get it handed to you in a hurry.
I know it backfired, but it was interesting hearing Cole after the game talk about how his velocity was popping early on his fastball and then made the conscious effort of, hey, if I'm going to go deep into this game, I can't throw 97, 98. It doesn't seem like we see a lot of pitchers do that in this day and age.
No, we see he's the type that can sort of save something in his back pocket and add when he needs to, especially late in the game. That's been his MO, really, his entire career. But yeah, you could see he got into, as I said before, he's like, let me just spot some fastballs and see if I can get some quick outs early in the count. And the quick outs went over the fence.
Right.
And next thing you know, you're behind the eight ball.
Yeah, is that prudent to think that way? I know, because he, at his best, last year he could have done it any game he wanted to because he was pitching at a Cy Young caliber. Is that smart? You know what I mean? Because even the young kids, they can hit 92.
Yeah, I think if you're going for, you know, location, then I can get it a little bit more so with guys that are sinker ballers. Put it in play, guys. Hit it on the ground and let's make a play. Spotting four seamers, you really have to thread that needle. It's sort of like bowling. You got to hit the lane, and if you miss the lane, then your lack of velocity and the straightness on the fastball, you can get hurt on.
We're talking to David Cohn. You can see him on the Yes Network. Does the Sunday Night Baseball as well. Any concern over the two bad starts from Carlos Rodon? Are you seeing anything that's concerning for you?
Not stuff-wise, no. You know, he's an emotional guy.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that.
He can get lit up in a hurry out there emotionally. So, yeah, you can see that happening, but his stuff is still good. I think he's kind of making that transition on what pitches to throw. I'm a power guy, but I know in the future they want me to feature a changeup and be more of a four-pitch guy. He's come up with a cutter this year, so repertoire-wise, he's kind of in a little bit of a new area for him and sequencing which pitches to throw. Do I just stay with my best two? You know, his last few years, he was fastball at the top of the zone and slider down, kind of a two-pitch guy, and he's trying to become a four-pitch guy. And in order to do that, there's going to be some bumps in the road. And I see that more as an issue, the sequencing of pitches in terms of how he goes about it as opposed to stuff. His stuff is still good.
This season has stiffened up a little bit. The competition for the Yankees, the series losses consecutively, it's worrisome. Should we be worried?
Absolutely, fans. That's what fans do, right?
I'm talking about internally. Aaron Boone be worried? He's going to speak optimism because that's just Aaron Boone.
Sure.
But I asked him yesterday, is something going to change at the deadline? And he just gave me a smile. I could see it. He was saying, yeah, it's going to change. But we don't know what it's going to be. But where's the worry level internally? Forget us fans, but I'm talking about internally.
No, I'm sure there is worry level internally, especially on the bullpen side. You know, do they have enough? Do they need more? We've seen, you know, a big turnover over the last couple of weeks in their bullpen alone. So, that's an area of concern. how far do you ride it out with some of your veteran guys? And, you know, do you still believe in them or not? You know, do you trust the track record? Do you think DJ LeMahieu can turn it around? Do you think Klaber's going to eventually turn it around? That's really what it comes down to.
Right.
You know, and then secondly, it's sort of like the NFL draft. When you look at the trade deadline, you think, well, we're going to get this guy.
Yeah.
Well, now you're going to get the best available talent, right? That's the way you do it. Because the best laid plans, when you target guys, it's going to be a seller's market. You know, there's not that many sellers because of the expanded playoff format. Right.
Who's out of it?
So you can't say, we're going to target this guy and go get that guy. Now there's six other teams that want that guy. So you better take the best available athlete you can find and plug him in and mix and match that way.
Well, look, they'll get somebody, but you're right. Like right now it's tough to figure out who the sellers are going to be. Internally, Kleber Torres has to be better. I mean, what we saw last night, first of all, that at-bat in the first inning was dreadful. The non-hustle play, the error. Is it mental with him? What do you think is going on with Kleber?
I think that's part of it. I mean, we've known Kleber a long time. I love Kleber. I think he's a great kid. I think he's wearing it right now emotionally. There's no doubt about it. The question of the old cliche is are you taking your offense out on defense with you? And you never know for sure, but what you see is that you worry about that. And maybe he does need a little bit of a break. And I think it's good he's out of the lineup tonight. Let him sit for a minute. If his groin's really that tight, then maybe that's affecting his offense as well. So, yeah, he needs a little mental break right now, and then maybe he can recharge a little.
Well, so he doesn't hustle. It was very noticeable to everybody, right? He says, my groin's bothering me. Maybe it is. I mean, he has had a groin issue. That's fine. I know as fans, we look at that and say, oh, this is crap. You can't play him. As a teammate, if you were a teammate, I'm sure there were plenty of teammates that didn't hustle back in your day. Does it kind of bother the team when they see a guy like that do that? Late in the game?
Well, there's two different schools of thought. You know, the old school of thought is this guy's a dog. You know, he doesn't care. That's not Kleber. Mm-hmm. These guys care too much. He's so disappointed that he hit another ground ball that he's mad at himself. That's why he didn't run as hard, along with the fact that maybe his groin is a little bit tight in that situation. But, you know, it's not like somebody who doesn't care. They care too much.
Right.
So there's a different level where back in the day, this guy's a dog. He doesn't care about the team. That's not the case here.
Yeah, and look, the other guy you mentioned, it's clearly not care because you can see it on his face. But when is the time for DJ to be not a regular player?
Well, you, it's easy to say, sit this guy, get that guy, release that guy. Well, okay, who's going to play?
Right.
You know, who are you going to replace him with? That's really the ultimate question is, do you have a better option? And
yeah, the problem is the Yankees don't right now.
They don't have a better option right now. And he still is DJ LeMahieu. He is a two-time batting champ. At some point, he's going to probably turn it around. His overall numbers on the year probably won't, as I said before, be what you're normally used to. But maybe for the last 2 months, he finds something and gets close to what his normal production is, and that works.
The guy, we're talking to David Cone, that I look at, and we're seeing it tonight with this Yankee lineup, that I think should just play every day and let's see what he's got, is Ben Rice. Because when they called him up, and we all saw the numbers down in the minors, he had lefties. So it's like, all right, let's just see if he can hit major league lefties. He didn't play yesterday. He is playing today against Sean Manaea. And look, there's so much kind of movement right now with this lineup. You need a DH with Giancarlo out. We mentioned DJ and Glaber's situation. To me, I would want Ben Rice every day, and let's just evaluate him and see if he can be an everyday player.
Well, it's a valid point, Evan. I mean, he leaves you wanting to see more.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. He faced Chris Sale the other night. Chris Sale's now Chris Sale again.
Right. He has been, yeah.
And Ben Rice didn't give an inch. I mean, he didn't get a hit off of Sale, but he made Sale throw 7, 8, 9 pitches, fouling him off, taking tough sliders. And that's when I opened my eyes and said, whoa, this kid's not giving an inch. And as I said before, when you watch Ben Rice play, it's like, I want to see more of that.
Right.
Just what you're saying. Let's see him play. Let's see him get 200 at-bats over the next couple of months or next, you know, 2.5 months and see what he turns out.
Do you think he grows into the long-term solution at first base? Because it's only been a few weeks.
Yeah, no, that's a big question. I mean, he's got high aptitude. Hmm. Smart kid. I mean, you know, it's easy to say Ivy Leaguer. He's from Dartmouth, you know, or whatever. He's bilingual.
Right. He's
perfectly bilingual. Pretty impressive.
That is very impressive.
In the clubhouse. So, yeah, obviously, he has high aptitude. He has great plate awareness, great plate presence. Can he play first base long term? He moves pretty good around there. Maybe he could learn the position. I mean, you know, I played with a guy, Tino Martinez, that learned how to play first base and got better and better and ended up winning a gold glove. And he came on the heels of Mattingly. And when Tino came over, we're like, uh-oh. You know, that's not Don Mattingly over there.
Right.
He has a glove on the wrong hand, first of all. So, but he turned into a gold glove guy at first base.
So when you pitched, was there sticky stuff? Like, what was the deal back then with that?
There was pine tar. There was guys that used pine tar. I was worried about blisters back then.
Right.
You know, obviously we
pine tar would give you blisters.
Yes, it would rip the the pads off of your fingertips. I mean, you rely on spinning and, you know, the friction when you put your fingertips on the seams is pretty violent as you twist and turn and manipulate the baseball. So I was always worried about that. But we didn't have Rapsodo. We didn't have high-speed cameras. We didn't understand you can increase spin rate and really affect the movement on the ball, especially on four-seam fastballs at the top of the zone. So, yeah, we didn't have that information. But 1988, playing for the Mets, Jay Howell has pine tar on his glove in the playoffs.
Right. Yeah.
Bart Giamatti sitting right there. They bring the glove over to the commissioner, and they, boom, you're out. So, yeah, that, you know, the sticky stuff is always better.
I wonder if Bart was like, this is sticky, not tacky.
You're right.
Well,
exactly.
I think we're all just deeply confused, and I know it affected the Mets the other day with Edwin Diaz, but I also think it could affect anybody at any moment. Like, who the heck knows? Clay Holmes comes into a game. It could be him next time. Gerrit Cole, we know about his history. It could be a Yankee. It could be a Met. Do you think this is a problem right now in Major League Baseball with the inconsistencies that we have?
Well, one thing they're really worried about it in central office is the strikeout rate. They want more action. They want more balls in play. The pitchers clearly are ahead of the curve with pitch design and all the new technology they use and weight training and weighted balls to chase velocity. So, yeah, the pitchers are better than ever. People ask me this. I see more better relievers, especially with nasty stuff.
Right.
Look at the Mets. Even though I know the numbers haven't been great, they had three guys that came in and threw 95 to 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
The ball Judge hit out was 99 miles an hour. You know,
right,
even though it was 0-2 right down the middle. But nonetheless, I mean, the pitching is fantastic. It's harder than ever to hit in this game. So I can understand, you know, Major League Baseball say, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
Is this really helping the strikeout rate? We need to get the strikeout rate down. We need to get the ball in play. Are they using a – is the punishment – does the punishment fit the crime? As far as it's a reliever out for 10 days as opposed to a starting pitcher who might miss one start.
Isn't there a way to kind of force pitchers to change and not have them throw as hard as often? Like, one idea, and I know it's been mentioned a little bit, is cut down the amount of pitchers that you could have on a roster. And now all of a sudden guys are like, wow, I got to go deep into this game. Or relievers are, hey, I can't just go max effort on every pitch. Is that a way, you think, to fix that problem? It'll have a trickle-down effect, right?
It will. You know, there's a lot of ideas that are going across Rob Manfred's desk right now in the commissioner's office, really the entire office. They're talking about it, trying to figure it out. I believe that the market corrects itself. If you, you know, the pitchers know that the chase for velocity is going to increase your risk for injury. And so, yeah, you know that. You're equipped with that. And so the pitchers that are more craftsmen, that can paint, that can get the ball down, put the ball on the ground. Even Peterson last night, even though he had some strikeouts, his sinker and changeup has led to a higher ground ball rate for him to great success. And those kind of guys like a Chris Bassett, you know, that are, you know, used to be obviously the former Met.
Blue Jays now.
He's a pitcher, right? He's painting in and out. He's got a lot of different looks. He moves the ball around. Those guys become more valuable as the guys trying to chase velocity and throw 100 miles an hour get hurt.
Yeah. Coney, how do pitchers and, you know, how do batters catch back up? You know what I mean? You're talking this pitcher advantage, spin rate, all these other things, sticky stuff, whatever. How do batters catch back up?
Well, there is technology for batters, too. You know, several hitters will go out to Driveline in Seattle, or there's several outlets of Driveline now, where you can study your biomechanics with force plates on the ground, the efficiency of your body movement. It's in all sports now, but especially baseball. You can really look at your mechanics. There's different high-speed cameras that can break down your mechanics as a hitter. There's new pitching machines that mimic the pitchers, the traject machine it's called, that you actually see the pitcher of the exact pitcher, and they have this exact spin rate and the movement, vertical and horizontal movement,
that
pitcher throws. And you have batting machines now that hitters are using that have just come out in the last 2 years. So, yeah. The hitters are behind the curve, but they're starting to catch up with some of the technology that's out there.
Now, lastly, for the Yankee fan listening, they trust you. They trust David Cohen. Yeah. They watch you on TV. They watch you, and they believe in you. Should they be worried, or should they calm down? Everything's going to be okay with the New York Yankees.
No, a good, healthy amount of worry is a good thing.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes, it's okay. That's what keeps you going. That's what keeps you interested, you know? And that's you watch, you scream at the TV, you're upset, they got to do this, you got to do that. That's a good thing for the game. That's why you call them fans, right? They're fanatics. So I have no problem with that. Judge and Soto are on a historic pace. They alone can carry this team to a certain extent. But you need help and you need some of the guys to fill in. And you got to really watch real closely on the trade deadline on who they add, because the Yankees are all in this year.
Oh, they have to be.
There's
to be.
No question. Well, they are all in.
Do you get the vibe Juan Soto wants to stay? He loves it in the Bronx? You get that vibe?
I think Juan Soto's a really smart guy. I think every city he goes to is like, this place is kind of nice. You know?
Oh, no. He was out here flirting with Met fans. Yesterday, he was out here flirting with Met fans.
I want to enjoy free agency.
Absolutely.
You know?
And he should. He's earned the right to.
He has. But Judge and Soto together, it kind of feels like that's the match that needs to happen.
It's incredible to watch. It really is. David, we appreciate it, man.
Sure, my pleasure, guys. Always good
great
to be on.
David Cone, you can see him on the YES Network, ESPN Sunday Night Baseball as well. Evan and Tiki will come right back. We'll talk to Ron Darling live from the Cadillac Club here at Citi Field before New York Mets versus New York Yankees. Just about an hour and a half away, and you get game number two of the Subway Series. The New York Mets, the Red Hot Mets, the New York Yankees. A game you will hear right here on WFAN, a game you will see on SNY. And joining us right now, he's become a legendary broadcaster along with legendary pitcher. And an author, the great Ronnie Darling. Ron, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on.
How many years have you been broadcasting the
Mets? This is my 19th year with the Mets. I did 1 year in Washington, so that's 20 total doing analysts.
Yeah, you're at legendary status.
Right. I mean, you hang on for it that long, you become legendary. How much longer from playing was it?
Oh, yeah, I played, 15 years or so.
Yeah, so 4 years.
So more
four
than
years
that.
Or so.
I've been with the Mets now. I was with them in 81 when I was traded, 82 when I was traded over. Left in 91, I was traded. So 10, 19, you know.
Right, so you've been a part of the game for a really long time. How has it changed for pitchers in particular since when you left?
The whole game for pitchers has changed. You know, third time through the order. God forbid you let the guy go third time through the order. 100 pitch counts is universal. That never was the case when I pitched. You know, the only way you got paid in those days was to pitch a lot of innings, start a lot of games, and they'd go, boy, he's really dependable.
Right.
And that was important. And now it is how good are you when you have the ball? And even if it's 20 as opposed to 30 times, if those 20 times are great, that's the way to get back.
Well, it's funny. It makes me think of last night. So last night, David Peterson was fine, right? He gets into a bases loaded, nobody out jam. He gets out of it. He gets taken out in the fifth inning with one out. And he gets this huge ovation. And I turned to my dad, and I said, I got to tell you, I can't give a standing ovation of 4 1/3. And he's like, I'm with you. I mean, as a former starter, 4 1/3 would be considered a failure.
You know, I don't like look at – you're right, 100%. But I don't look at it like that anymore. Like, each generation has a way to define their own game.
Right.
And they want to play the game they want to – you know, they'll play it the way they want to play it. So I don't look at it that way. I think they were really cheering because he got out of the bases loaded in the first inning.
Yes.
That's probably why
yes.
they were cheering.
Right.
Probably.
It's the same with hitters, right? I mean – hitting for average doesn't necessarily matter anymore.
It's just all defined. Like, I'm told all the time by people that analyze this game or analysts, people that get information, the win doesn't really count. Well, it counts when you're a pitcher in the day. So,
look who's joining you, Ron. Look what's behind you. Mr. Met.
What's up, Mr. Met?
By the way, Mr. Met, I got a big question for you. Is the grimace thing bothering you? Is it taking away your shine? Or are you good
funny.
With grimace?
No.
Thank
you're
you.
Good
with grimace?
Mrs. Met.
All right, good. It's all love. Good job, Mr. Met. Oh, hey, Mr. Met brought tea and water.
I have two of them. Nice. I got a Mr. and
much.
Mrs. Met water. This
fantastic.
Is amazing.
Very nice. Bobblehead, the whole thing.
Appreciate it. My son loves you. Big fan. Yeah, I'll drink it. I'm going to drink
is
it
this,
right now.
Is this like alcoholic water? I don't know. He's encouraging us to drink. I don't know.
He says we need to be refreshed.
We
I
are at the Cadillac
that.
Club, so.
Thank you very much, Mr. and Mrs.
Mr. Matt. Mr. and Mrs. Appreciate Matt look a little bit like rosé all day, don't you think?
They do, right?
Yeah, especially Mrs. Matt. You're definitely a rosé all day gal.
That's right. And there are Mr. and Mrs. Matt, ladies and gentlemen. I feel very good.
Thank you.
I feel very good they like Grimace because I was concerned that there was going to be a rivalry.
Oh,
no, I'm
really?
Glad things are good.
Don't let Grimace steal your shine, Mr. Matt.
Are you, you know, baseball is a funny game. And a lot of weird stuff can happen.
That's right.
And the Washington Nationals of 2019 is a great lesson. I think they were 19-30. Boom, they get hot. They make the playoffs. They win a championship. But as you're sitting here watching this Met team through May, one of the worst months you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Did you ever think this could happen?
Well, you knew they had it in them. They have some good players. And you couldn't really understand what they were going through in May because it wasn't just one or two people. Mm-hmm. It was a whole team-wide kind of epidemic. So you knew at some point they were going to come out of it. But to go from maybe one of the worst months any team has had this season in May to the best team in baseball right now as far as record is concerned, it's quite a turnaround. But it tells you how the game is. There are more teams that are alike than teams that are not.
Yeah.
And there's probably, what, a half dozen really unbelievable teams,
right,
and everyone else is really fighting for a spot.
True, and there's three or four really, really bad teams that are likely out of it, but everybody else is kind of in the mix.
That's
the
right.
Subway Series is obviously what we're here for. It's a huge deal, only because, at least this year, because the Mets can pull to 500, right? And I think against the Yankees in this town, it becomes even a bigger deal if they should sweep the Yankees in the Subway Series. How important is this, one, because of that, but also just the continuation of this excellence?
Yeah, I think I look at it always as a four-game series because they play, what, a month from now,
yep,
a couple at Yankee Stadium. But I think what you're looking at right now is a Yankee team that's a little depleted. You know, they are so top-heavy. Volpe and Soto and Judge, you don't get any better than that. And they showed you last night, mm-hmm, what they can do. But the Mets right now are playing their best baseball. And the Yankees are challenged really for the first time because they've been great all summer long. So the Mets are catching them at a good time, but a month from now, you know how baseball is, it could be different.
What have you seen? Because I think one of the big keys to the success this year has been Luis Severino. He's been their best starting pitcher. He may be an all-star. Yankee fans are listening and saying, what happened? Because last year when he was healthy.
Yeah.
But he was healthy and he was throwing batting practice.
I think his mind wasn't healthy.
Maybe.
I think he was, you could hear it, he was doubting himself.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going on, I stink, blah, 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 blah. He needed a mental break.
Do you think that's it, Ron? Like, were you seeing something different that's working
for
Severino?
No, first the mental part. I think Tiki's right. There's every athlete goes through it. When you lose your confidence, it doesn't matter if you're healthy. It doesn't matter what your stuff is. It doesn't matter if your legs feel great.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're hitting the right holes. If you don't have the confidence, then it's really hard for you to excel the way you can. Now, physically, what he's done this year, to me, he's pitched more to contact.
Right.
He's a guy, when he first came up, you know, you were anticipating him striking out in double digits every night. Doesn't really care about that anymore. And the two-seam pitch, the sinking fastball that is back in play now because pitchers are trying to last a little longer, has given him a lot of room because he is forcing right-handers to cover both sides of the plate, the inside fastball and the slider away.
Right.
And once you do that to any hitter, I don't care how good they are, they got to cover that much space. Almost impossible to excel.
We are talking to Ron Darling. Mets get set for this big Yankee series. One guy I'm excited to see again is Christian Scott. Like, they got to call him up in a week. I assume they will. I know they're trying to manage his innings.
Yeah.
What did you see from Christian Scott in the limited time he was here?
I think more of the insides than the outsides. You know, like the physical gifts are there. You know, 97 plus with a sweeper and a slider, the split finger changeup. Those are all good enough to be an excellent starter at this level. But the insides that you see from him, when things didn't go well, he had a start where he did not have his great stuff. He went five innings, gave up a run. Those are the things you judge. Sports are beautiful in this way. You never judge an athlete when they're at the top of their game because things come so easy. When things aren't easy, who are the guys that kind of man up during that time? And I saw a lot of that from him.
Yeah, an interesting one in that regard is Tyler McGill, because there's been points where he's felt really good. This is the back-end starter. He's reliable. You can count on him. But then there's other ones where it's like, all right, he's playing to the back of his baseball card. And I don't mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
It's a 4.7 ERA, and his whip's at 1.4 or 5 or something like that. Like, for a guy like that who's probably in these conversations of, are you going to send them down to bring some more depth up, to bring some of these young guys, how does he stay current and stay doing his job the way that he's supposed to be doing his job?
You know, that's a great question. Tiki, the margins of how to be successful at the major league level, at professional level, in any sport, is so finite. It's so close. And I believe this, for pitchers especially, there's no other job, maybe a goalie in hockey, but there's no other job where you don't do your job well, the manager of a team comes and takes the ball away from you in front of 50,000 fans because you're not good enough to do it,
right,
and calls someone in to replace you, and mentally you got to be able to handle that.
Right.
So I always think for the young pitchers especially, and Tyler's in this mix, physically, does he have the gifts to excel here? 100%. But I found in my own career, and I find when I watch young pitchers, until you believe that your stuff is better than the people that are facing you for 2 hours, you'll never get to that place you want to go. And it's not kind of fake confidence. Not like, you know I can do it. It's belief.
Right.
Like, I don't care who's coming up. If I execute my pitches, you're sitting down. And I think that leapfrog of that last little bridge is one of the longest jumps in the world for young pitchers.
You know, looking at the way this team has sparked and turned it around, there's a few young guys that have certainly contributed in a big way. We know about Mark Vientos and how much he's hit. But I thought last night, I made this point earlier to Tiki, that I thought Francisco Alvarez's at-bat in the first inning, which he drew a walk against Gerrit Cole,
right,
in a lot of ways changed the entire game. And it seems like the pitchers love throwing to him. Like, it seems like Francisco Alvarez, it's such a crazy
young
game.
Yeah, as a catcher, right.
As a catcher, really has it all right now.
Well, first, the offensive part of the game. If you watch last night, he fouled off some really tough pitches to stay in the at-bat. Got a couple of walks. That's something you wouldn't see last season. So his pitch recognition, commanding the strike zone, has improved exponentially. I think that the hitting is going to come. It's going to come in a big way. He's not quite there yet, but he's 12 for his last 24. He might be on his way. As far as the catching is concerned, most of the time when a catcher, a young catcher, is hit first, catch second, they remain that their entire career. And he put it on himself to become such a good catcher and such a leader. I don't know who taught him how to play, but that person should teach more people how to play, because he has a great feel, a great attitude, great instincts. And, you know, I hate to throw this on him because I don't know him well enough, but what I see, he has amazing leadership qualities.
Yeah.
Very few players have that. He's got it.
Yeah, sometimes it's just, it's innate. You're not even necessarily trying to do it. There's some guys that are rah-rah guys, and they're yelling and screaming, and they're in your face, and they're motivating you. But there's other guys that, by example, is the cliche, but that's not really what we're talking about here, because you see it in how he manages, his IQ. Like, last year, we talked a lot about how he would recognize, all right, my pitcher needs a break. I'm going to go do a mound visit, right? Like, these little things that rookies shouldn't be doing. It's like innate. He feels it.
I think he went to got his PhD with Scherzer and Verlander.
Right. That probably helped a lot.
You know how afraid you'd be as a young catcher to have to catch these future Hall of Famers? And he fit in nicely, not perfect, fit in nicely. And to catch a pitching staff that's really a veteran pitching staff, and to have guys like Jose Quintana, who've started 350 times in their career, just having love for the pitch to this young man, I think says a lot about Jose Quintana, and also says a lot about Alvy.
You know, so watching this Met team, and by no stretch is their starting pitching their strong suit. They're going to win games because they have a really good lineup, their defense is hopefully getting better, and they could have a good bullpen when Edwin Diaz is healthy. But put your national baseball hat on for a second. I almost think the Mets' strategy is the right one. Let's just sign guys to one-year deals. Because starting pitchers outside of very few guys, Gerrit Cole, I know Corbin Burns will be a free agent. Outside of that, you can't trust any of them. Do you think in a weird way, even though, again, the Mets starting pitching isn't their strength, that the Met way of building their rotation this year may almost be the copycat around baseball of, let's just get guys on one-year deals?
Well, I think what they did is they bet on guys that have had success. Right? Severino, he's coming off a tough year, but he had like exquisite success. Manaea had some huge years, no-hitter pitcher, those kind of things. So they were betting on guys that had years and hoping those they return to that form. Quintana's been just one of those steady kind of eddy guys that takes the ball, doesn't miss a start. So, yeah, I'm with you. To be on any kind of 1 or 2 year contracts with all your pitchers is the best way to do it because of the breakdown of guys. But, you know, there's very few pitchers who you can look at and go, boy, he deserves a 10-year contract and this or that. It's just it's become a very tenuous position.
But I think it's unique to the Mets. Maybe there's other teams that are in the same situation, but the reason the Mets can get away with it in a sense is because the farm system is good with Christian Scott and Vassell and some of these other guys that are down there. Eventually, you're going to replace them with the young kid.
Yes.
That proves themselves.
But what you're doing is you're not giving out long-term contracts.
Right. It's a bridge.
Yeah.
Like, you're building just this little bridge. It's going to come down in a year or two, or maybe if they prove themselves, they'll be here for a long term. But it's just this little bridge to this amazing farm system. So the other part of the job, which is building your farm system, I think matters. That's the only way you can do that, right?
100%. And also, the way they did it, you know, to shift gears 180 degrees. Last year it was Scherzer and Verlander and giving them crazy money, right, for a couple of years. But then when that didn't work out, they pivoted and were able really to buy draft picks. That's what they did.
Yeah.
And to fill their farm system. And then they have these guys. I think there's an upside to the pitchers that they have on the roster right now. They've walked too many people. If they can be more efficient, I think you will see more six-inning, two-run kind of efforts. And if you have that with this lineup, I think you're on your way.
Well, you get to see Ronnie tonight. Mets Yankees, SNY on TV. You can obviously hear it on the radio as well. We appreciate you coming by.
Thank you, Ron. You're the best, man. Great to see you again.
Great Ron Darling, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we'll get to your phone calls. We promise, 888-808-1019. And we'll check in on both starting lineups, the Met lineup and the Yankee lineup. Evan and Tiki live from the Cadillac Club at Citi Field.